Welcome to the Great Detectives of Old Time Radio. From Boise, Idaho, this is your host, Adam Graham. If you have a comment, email it to me, box13 at greatdetectives.net. Follow us on Twitter at Radio Detectives and check us out on Instagram, instagram.com/greatdetectives. And today we're bringing you our final listener support slash appreciation special. You can become one of our ongoing Patreon supporters for as little as $2 per month at patreon.greatdetectives.net, and you will receive my monthly newsletter, and you'll also be able to choose our summer series for The Amazing World of Radio. In addition, whether you're able to contribute or not, I would encourage you to fill out our advertising survey at adsurvey.greatdetectives.net, as it will help us be able to find the best possible sponsor for the podcast. And I have a very special guest with us today, Tom Fox. I met Tom at PodFest Expo in Orlando back in January. He is the owner of the Compliance Podcast Network and the host of a slew of compliance-related podcasts. For our purposes, the most relevant one is Adventures in Compliance, which examines compliance and ethics lessons that can be drawn from the Sherlock Holmes stories. Tom, welcome to the Great Detectives of Old Time Radio.
Adam, thank you so much for inviting me. I'm really honored to be on your show.
Thank you, Tom. And I was actually a guest on Tom's podcast, Adventures in Compliance, and I will include a link to that in the show notes. All right. Well, for this special, we will be bringing you a Sherlock Holmes adventure, The Elusive Agent. This was released in 1949 as a three-episode story. It's actually the only multi-part Sherlock Holmes story from the golden age of radio to survive, although there were many others in the 1930s and from the 40s when Basil Rathbone and Nigel Bruce adapted the Sherlock Holmes novels to radio. But alas, they're all lost. However, towards the end of the 1948-49 season, Mutual decided to experiment with bringing back long-form stories. For the first time, we're bringing you all three parts in a single podcast. We've cut out the exposition and redundant openings, closings, and recaps, but left most of the commercials for your listening pleasure. And then after the podcast, we're going to talk a little bit to Tom, not only about the episode, but about Adventures in Compliance. So here from March 21st, 28th, and April 4th of 1949 is The Elusive Agent.
From New York City, the makers of Clipper Craft Clothes for Men and more than 1,200 leading retail stores from coast to coast present that immortal character created by Sir Arthur Conan Doyle, the world's most famous detective, Sherlock Holmes, starring John Stanley. This week's story, The Adventure of the Elusive Agent.
Holmes, the quarry we followed from the docks went into that room off this corridor here.
Right, Watson.
What are we waiting here for? Why don't we just go in?
Patience, Watson, patience. We cannot precipitate ourselves into a trap on sheer impulse.
Holmes, Major Scott!
Quick, Watson, into that room. The trap is sprung. We must get to the victim.
We're at the door of Dr. John Watson's study, and we're about to hear another of his adventures with the fabulous Sherlock Holmes.
Well, good evening, Mr. Harris.
Good evening, Dr. Watson. You have a memoir for us tonight, I hope?
I have indeed, Mr. Harris. In fact, I had just finished editing it when you came in. I might say that this particular adventure is of first-rank importance, not only in the life of my friend Holmes, but on the course of history itself. The stakes were the highest, and on the outcome hinged the issue of empire itself. In no other adventure that I can recall were our protagonists more ruthless, more shrewd, and more cruel.
Sounds like you've got a treat for us tonight. What do you call it, Dr. Watson?
Well, Holmes and I always refer to it as the adventure of the elusive agent. And after you have enlightened our audience to the merits of Clippercraft Clothes, Mr. Harris, I shall proceed with this highly unusual story.
Today, it's official. It's spring. Time for you, Mr. Man, to get a new spring suit and a new spring top coat. Make sure you get Clippercraft. Clippercraft, the best clothes you can buy for the money. Beautiful new spring all-wool worsted Clippercraft suits only $45. Clippercraft all-wool gabardine or covert top coats, only $40 to $47.50. Clippercraft clothes make you look your best because they look like they cost much, much more. Get your Clippercraft spring outfit tomorrow. And now, Dr. Watson, what about the adventure of the elusive agent?
Well, Mr. Harris, it began in 1913. This was a year when Holmes's brother, now Sir Mycroft Holmes, had publicly achieved the post of minister at large at Whitehall, but secretly conducted the affairs of British intelligence. 1913, I might add, was a year of international tension, notably between Britain and Germany, which a year later culminated in the First World War. It was behind the shadowy scenes of espionage that this adventure first began. And specifically, it began one dark night on the Berlin Express, plunging northward from Budapest toward the German capital. There was a knock on a compartment door.
Yeah, who is it? Who's there?
The Trade Inspector Hermelin.
What is it? What do you want?
I have a telegram for you, Herr Meiner.
Oh, one moment. I don't... Donnerwetter! You are not...
Don't make a sound, Miller. Get back in that compartment of yours. Get back, I said, or I'll blow your head off. Now, that's better, my friend. Much better.
So, you're an Englishman. What do you want?
The plans, mein Herr.
Plans? Huh, I do not know what you're talking about.
Don't you, Herr Miller? Then listen. Last night in Budapest, you knifed an Englishman in the back. Took a waterproof packet of papers from him. You're on your way to deliver them to the Wilhelmstrasse in Berlin now. Hand them over. Be quick about it.
You'll never get those plans, you swine.
Sorry, Herr Miller, but I must have them now.
No.
Yes, I must have them. Yes, Herr Miller.
Congratulations, my dear Norton. You've done an excellent job in intercepting that German agent and returning these pals to our embassy here in Berlin.
Thank you, Sir Mycroft.
Unfortunately, our problem has only begun, my dear boy. These plans are of the highest importance, and we must get them out of Germany and back to Whitehall at once. Now, you understand, these are the originals, the only copies of the plans in existence. They were stolen by this German agent you intercepted from the inventor himself before he was able to get them to the War Office, and we could have copies made.
But I understand you're returning to London tonight, are you not, Sir Mycroft?
I am, but I cannot take the plans with me.
No? Why not, sir?
Ostensibly, I am Sir Mycroft Holmes, British Minister without portfolio, here on official business. Actually, I'm here to see that these plans get back to London, and the Wilhelmstrasse knows it.
I see.
I have been watched every step of the way. The Germans have revoked our form of privilege and will examine all diplomats of the customs. Now, we can't risk relaying the data to Whitehall by code on the chance that the Germans may already have broken it. It will be a dangerous and delicate mission to smuggle them out of Germany in... One moment. One moment, my boy. By Jove, I believe I have it.
Yes, sir?
I recall reading in the newspapers that you are to marry a British subject here in Berlin by the name of Miss Pamela Rivers.
That's right, Sir Mycroft.
And, if I remember, you are to be married this Saturday and will return to England for your honeymoon.
Yes, sir, those are our intentions.
Oh, yes, I'm sure it will work. Philip Norton, British attaché, takes bride, honeymoons in England. Excellent, excellent. Very romantic, innocuous in purpose, not calculated to arouse suspicion.
Sir, I don't understand.
Norton, my boy, marry your girl. Take your bride to England with you. And take something else in addition.
Yes, Sir Mycroft. What?
The plans, Norton. The plans.
Darling, darling, Philip. Oh, it all seems like a wonderful dream.
Does it, Pam?
Yes, Philip, yes. I'm glad we didn't dance that last dance. I'm glad we came up on deck here together, just the two of us alone. I think I'll always remember this moment, Philip, this moment of our honeymoon. I'll always remember what the music was playing and how the moon shone up there on the sky and the lights of England of home shining over there on the shore.
So will I, Pam. So will I.
Philip.
Yes, darling.
Put your arms around me. Hold me close.
Pam.
Closer, darling, closer. That's it. Oh, darling, darling, Philip, kiss me. Now, tell me that you love me.
I love you, Pam.
I love you, I love you.
Do you really, darling?
Pam, what...
Surprise, darling?
Pam, you've got a knife. You just...
Yes, you English swine, and you're going to feel the blade again. Now, my dear departed bridegroom, the plans. Yes, here in your coat pocket, as I thought. Now, if I can roll you overboard through the opening in this rail... There! Over you go. Goodbye, my romantic darling. And thanks for the wedding present. The porthole. Gustav should be below in a small boat. That was the arrangement. Gustav! Gustav, are you there?
Ja, Fräulein. You have the plans?
Yes.
Hold them down to me through the porthole.
You are?
Thank you, Fräulein. That swine Norton. So he thought he could smuggle the plans.
One moment, Gustav. Only half the plans are there. I have the other half.
But what is the meaning of this?
It means that the half I have is for sale.
I see. But the Herr Director has paid you well.
Tell your master if he wants the rest of these plans, he will have to be more generous. You understand, Gustav?
Very well, I shall tell him. And when you come ashore, Fräulein, we shall be waiting for you at the rendezvous. Auf Wiedersehen.
So, young Norton disappeared while the Oceania lay at quarantine in Southampton, eh, Mycroft?
Yes, Sherlock. I'm sorry to have roused you and Dr. Watson here in the dead of night on a mission you never anticipated, but we have impounded the passengers and crew of the vessel at Southampton for questioning, and we need your talents desperately now. Indeed, if the plans are not recovered, the life of England and of the Empire itself are in jeopardy.
Sounds like a formidable affair, I must say.
Quite. But, my dear Mycroft, since we are to become involved with these plans, it might be helpful to know something of their nature.
These papers, 10 in all, were the designs of a new weapon, Sherlock. A kind of land monster built to revolutionize modern warfare. In short, an armor-plated mobile vehicle we call a tank.
A tank, eh? By Jove, Holmes, this sounds like something out of Jules Verne.
Yes, it does indeed, Watson.
Sherlock, I beg of you to bend every effort to the recovery of those plans, to use every facet of your genius to track them down.
Now, be of good cheer, Mycroft. It's my opinion that the plans have already been spirited from the Oceania, but it may not yet be too late. If I get aboard, I shall have some pertinent questions to ask.
Whom will you begin with, Holmes?
Since it's the bridegroom who's missing, my dear Watson, I shall obviously begin with the bride. Now, Mrs. Norton, exactly what happened after you and your husband had gone to the upper deck of the vessel here?
It was a little chilly. I asked Philip to wait for a moment. I left him alone, went down to my cabin to get a wrap. When I returned, he was gone.
And after you searched the boat and couldn't find him, you notified the captain, eh?
Yes, Dr. Watson, yes. Mr. Holmes, please, I can't answer any more questions, not now. Philip, my husband, he's gone. I loved him so, now he's gone.
I'm sorry, Mrs. Norton. I realize what a strain you've been under, and there's no need to detain you any longer. You are at liberty to retire to your cabin now.
Thank you, Mr. Holmes. Thank you very much.
The juice, Holmes. I must confess, I found it a heartbreaking experience. Watch this poor girl.
Did you, Watson?
Eh? What do you mean?
I mean that the woman lied.
What?
Come, Watson, it's painfully obvious. She distinctly said that she went down to get her wrap, did she not?
Well, yes. Yes, she did. But what is...
Consider, my dear fellow, if you were a bridegroom on your honeymoon and in a chivalrous mood, would you allow your bride to go to the trouble of getting her own wrap?
Well, I... No. No, dashed if I would.
Precisely. You would not. No man would. Watson.
Yes, Holmes?
Notify the authorities to allow all passengers to disembark.
Yes, but Holmes, you haven't questioned any of the others.
I don't think it'll be necessary, Watson. Time is too short and we must gamble at long odds. From now on, we shall concentrate all our energies on following the bereaved bride.
Now, with your permission, we're going to transport Sherlock Holmes and Dr. Watson from England to America for a few moments. They are in a typical American city.
Oh, I say, Holmes, that's a very successful-looking chap standing there, isn't it? A banker, would you say?
Not at all, my dear Watson. He is not a man of wealth or position, but a man of extremely good taste. He looks successful because he succeeded in finding an excellent tailor.
Well, then he's an athlete, wouldn't you say?
At first glance, yes. But I'm quite sure that his broad shoulders and tapering waist are really the results of excellent clothing design.
Well, then he must be wealthy to afford such a splendid tailor. To see what beautiful fabric is in his suit.
Oh, my dear Watson, you're obviously unfamiliar with the American way of life. That man to whom you refer is wearing a Clippercraft suit, which, if I'm not mistaken, sells for only $45.
But how?
Well, you see, Watson, some 1,200 retail merchants all over America have pooled their tremendous buying power to make these really extraordinary Clippercraft values possible.
Yes, but
don't interrupt, Watson. As a symbol of the honest New England quality and value of Clippercraft clothing, they have adopted the name Clippercraft in emulation of the famous New England Clipper ships and the modern aircraft of the same name. These are synonymous with New England quality.
Oh, I see. But tell me, Holmes, how did you recognize that chap as the wearer of a Clippercraft suit?
Elementary, my dear Watson. He's the best-dressed man in sight.
How right you are, Sherlock Holmes. The best-dressed man in sight, the successful-looking man, is the man who wears a Clippercraft suit. Yet Clippercraft new spring suits cost only $45, and Clippercraft gabardine and covert topcoats only $40 to $47.50. See the new Clippercraft spring styles tomorrow. Clippercraft clothes are sold by your local store whose business it is to give you honest value. That's why men who know insist on Clippercraft clothes bearing the Clippercraft label. So be sure to visit the Clippercraft store in your city.
These leading stores in the metropolitan area are proud to add their names to Clippercraft in your suits and topcoats. In Manhattan, John Wanamaker's men's stores, Broadway at 8th and 67 Liberty Street, Saks 34th, Broadway at 34th. In Brooklyn, Abram and Strauss. In Newark, New Jersey, Boulevard Men's Shop, Kresge Newark. And in Jamaica, the B&B Clothes Shop, 16408 Jamaica Avenue.
Now, Dr. Watson, you were relating to us the adventure of the elusive agent.
So I was, Mr. Harris, so I was. Our task, as Holmes had explained, was to keep the bereaved bride, Mrs. Philip Norton, under our watchful surveillance. And this on the theory that she might lead us to the stolen plans for the new British armored monster named the Tank. We saw her take the train to London, and we followed. Then at London, she took the underground, and we followed, keeping out of sight in the next car. And finally, she emerged at the suburban station of Golders Green. Oh, she went into this house. I believe I saw someone admit her to that door there in the corridor.
Yes, quite. You shall wait here for her to emerge, Watson.
Yes, but why? Why don't we just go in?
Patience, my dear man, patience. Our belief is that Mrs. Norton did not see us shadowing her, but we cannot be sure. Be shrewd, my dear fellow, a consummate actress and no fool. For all we know, this may be a trap. You have your service revolver with you, Watson?
Yes, I've got it right here.
Good. Better have it ready, my dear fellow. In a very short time, you may have occasion to use it.
Ah, so you have already come to see us, Frau Norton.
I do not wish to be caught prowl any longer, Gustav. The mockery is over and that fool Norton is dead.
As you wish, Fräulein.
Where's your master? As you know, we have a business appointment.
The Herr Director has delegated me to represent him in these negotiations.
Very well. I have half the plans. Your master has the other half. Without one portion, the other portion is useless. How much am I bid, Gustav?
The Herr Director is inclined to be generous. You have already been well paid, but he realizes there are certain expenses. He's willing to pay you £10,000 on receipt of your half the plan.
£10,000?
It is a handsome sum, my dear, to pay a blackmailer.
It's a pittance. The answer's no. The price is £50,000.
Oh, you must be mad with grief.
£50,000, my dear Gustav. I know what those designs are worth. Price is low and of no consequence to the organization you represent. Consider what the British would pay for those papers. Well, Gustav?
I am empowered to go as high as £20,000. That is my final offer.
£50,000, and that is my final offer.
You have the papers with you?
I have. Oh, but don't think you can take them from me by violence, Gustav, and remove me for good. It really wouldn't be worth it, you know. I have a trusted friend in London, and he has a sealed letter. In this letter is all the information I possess concerning the German espionage ring, not only on the continent, but in England, too. You understand?
Yeah, Fräulein, I understand.
And finally, the letter contains the identity of the ringleader himself, Gustav. Your master and mine. In the event of my disappearance, my friend is to mail this letter to the chief of British intelligence at Whitehall. The price is still £50,000, Gustav.
Perhaps you had better talk to the Herr Director personally, my dear Fräulein. He's in the next room, and I will summon him. The Director of the Fräulein is here. Will you talk to her?
Naturally. And I'm sure we shall come to some conclusion speedily. Good evening, Fräulein. It was so considerate of you to visit our little hideaway far out here in Goldesprit. I understand you've named a price for those plans.
£50,000.
It's a little high, my dear. May I make a counter offer?
What is it?
This. Simple. Hey, Gustav? The ideal way to make a bargain. Quick, efficient, ruthless. And so we bid farewell to the bride.
But, Herr Director, the letter she wrote to her
Don't
friend...
Don't take me for a fool, Gustav. Both the friend and the letter were destroyed long before she arrived in England. What? I haven't my agents honeycombing this foul and miserable island for nothing. Quick now, search her for the plans.
Yeah, Director.
Open up! Open the door!
They've got it locked.
Herr Director, it's Sherlock Holmes. He's followed her here.
Yes, quick, Gustav, out the back way.
But the plans...
There's no time now. Above all, we cannot afford to be seen. Quick.
Hold the lock off with your pistol, Watson.
Yes, right, Holmes. Yes, you know, Holmes, the beggar's got away with the garden walls. Well, Holmes, you got the plans, eh?
Yes, Watson. They were on Mrs. Norton's body here. Unfortunately, however, we have only half the packet.
Half?
Quite. Only five designs are here, and you'll recall Mycroft told us there were 10 in all.
Yes, but the other five, where could they be?
No doubt in the hands of the ruthless agents who just shot Mrs. Norton here. Might very well have been that she came here with the idea of selling them, and... Watson.
Yes, Holmes?
You detect a faint odor of tobacco in this room?
Tobacco?
Yes.
Yes, Holmes. Come to think of it, I do.
Interesting scent, Watson. Very.
What do you mean? This smells like ordinary tobacco to me.
On the contrary, this one's a rare and very unusual blend.
Yes? Well, what?
It's a cross mixture, Watson. The base is a strong and heavy perique, tempered with a bit of burley, and more than just a touch of Euphrates yellow leaf grown in the river valleys of eastern Turkey. Only one expert in London or in all of England will create a mixture like this. Grimsby.
Grimsby?
Grimsby, the tobacconist. He specializes in these rare and exotic blends. He owns a little hole in the wall in Soho.
Well, by Jove, Holmes, then we can go there and ascertain who ordered this blend, eh?
Precisely. But one thing is sure, my dear fellow. One thing is certain. Now that we possess half the plans, our constant companion is danger. And we are marked men. So you did mix that blend I described, Grimsby.
Yes, yes, Mr. Holmes, I did. I most certainly did. A very unusual formula, very unique. I made it at the purchaser's own request, of course.
And who was this purchaser, Grimsby?
Well, now it was a foreign gentleman named Marco, Sir Amy Marco.
Marco, eh? Could you describe him to us?
Oh, yes, Mr. Holmes. He had a most unusual face, one that you wouldn't soon forget. A tall man he was, sir, very fastidiously dressed with a thin face, somewhat like a hat. But it was his mouth you'd notice anywhere.
Yes? What about his mouth?
Now, Dr. Watson, it had a sort of unfortunate twitch at the corner every now and then, a very annoying habit, to be sure.
Yes, quite. Would you know where this Emil Marco lived, Grimsby?
Yes, Mr. Holmes, I would. I had a messenger deliver a tin of his tobacco mixture to him. He's staying at the Barclay Hotel.
I say, there, room clerk.
Yes, gentlemen, what can I do for you?
We're looking for a gentleman named Marco, Emil Marco. What room does he occupy?
Why, he did occupy a suite on the third floor, sir.
Did? You mean he's left?
Yes, sir, he left only this morning.
Would you know his destination from here?
Yeah, let's see, Marco, Emil Marco.
Think, it's of the utmost importance that you remember.
Well, one moment, I do remember.
Yes, where did he go?
I recall his luggage was routed for the Hotel Metropole in Paris. I remember it from the label.
Hotel Metropole in Paris. Come, Watson, there's no time to lose.
Operator, give me City 923. Yes. Are you there? This is Bradley at the Barclay. The gentlemen were here. They found out about Marco and they're trading him to Paris. Yes, sir. I told them where they could find him myself.
Who is that handsome-looking man? Who is that handsome-looking man?
That's you, Mr. Listener, you. In a new spring Clippercraft suit with a beautiful Clippercraft gabardine top coat over your arm.
So athletic-looking. Broad shoulders, tapering waist.
That's Clippercraft designing. Clippercraft design does make you look your best every time.
So prosperous-looking. Such a rich-looking suit. Such beautiful tailoring.
Shh. Your new Clippercraft spring suit in 100% all-wool worsted costs only $45. That's right, only $45. And your new spring Clippercraft topcoat in genuine gabardine or all-wool covert is only $40 to $47.50.
What an impressive executive type.
Maybe an executive and certainly a man of excellent judgment who understands that when more than 1,200 independent merchants pool their tremendous buying power, as those Clippercraft merchants have done, they can offer you really fabulous values, as they do in Clippercraft clothes.
What a well-dressed man. What a handsome-looking man. What a successful-looking man. He's for me.
That's you. You. You in a new spring Clippercraft suit. Better choose yours tomorrow.
Compartment door is opening.
Yes, we have a visitor, Watson.
Look, there's a hand with a gun.
Extinguish the lights in your compartment, Holmes.
We'll do nothing of the sort.
I will not enter until you have extinguished the lights.
Do as he says, Watson. He couldn't possibly miss you from there.
Well, very well. Well, complete darkness.
I'm sorry it is necessary for us to meet under these strange circumstances, Holmes, but it may in the future be necessary that you do not recognize me. Therefore, my request for darkness.
But, George,
I... Oh, I can see your silhouettes. If either of you attempts to move or calls for help, I will blow out your brains.
What is the purpose of this visit, sir?
You are journeying to Paris to find Mr. Emil Marco.
What of it?
I can save a great deal of time and trouble for you.
Can you?
Yes. I represent Mr. Marco. As you know, he already has half of a set of plans in his possession. But his portion is worthless because you have the other half, Holmes.
Indeed, and I do not intend to surrender it.
Mr. Marco is fully prepared to make an intriguing offer.
What is it?
Give me your half of the plans. We will pay you £20,000.
Rubbish.
Say £30,000?
The plans are not for sale.
£50,000.
If you finish stating the nature of your offer, sir, you may leave.
I've never found myself in a situation where enough money would not provide a happy solution. You have a price, Holmes, I'm sure.
I most certainly have not. There may well be persons of differing political views who would betray the British Empire. I'm not one of them.
Come, come, Holmes, very touching. Now, would you name your price?
There isn't any.
Holmes, you are forcing us to take the plans from you.
If you can find my half.
And you are forcing us to kill you.
If that can be arranged.
Might I point out that in our organization we never kill our opponents in an ordinary manner, that we prefer to torture them to death? I'd accept the money if I were you.
My answer is a definite and final no. You might inform Emil Marco that I intend to secure his half of the plans and return them to Whitehall.
Very ambitious, but you underestimate the power of Marco's organization, which will now be devoted to securing your half of the plans and to conceiving new and exciting torture devices for you and Dr. Watson. Good night, gentlemen. I planned this as a short and pleasant visit. I trust that it was.
Well, let's after the rascal, Holmes.
That's futile, Watson. He's armed, we're not. Even in these few seconds, doubtless he disappeared into another compartment. Besides, we've no idea what he looks like. We must wait, Watson, for Paris and the Hotel Metropole.
I will open the door. Ah, bonsoir.
Bonsoir, mademoiselle. I am Sherlock Holmes. My colleague, Dr. Watson.
How do you do?
Enchanté.
The clerk downstairs told us this was Emile Marco's suite.
It is.
May we come in?
Yes, of course. I am Mademoiselle Mathilde Piaget. Emile is not here. Make yourselves comfortable, gentlemen.
Thank you.
May I help you?
When will Mr. Marco return, mademoiselle?
Emile said he would return tonight at 9.
You are a friend of his, I presume?
I met Emile at the bar of this hotel just a short time ago. But we are already very close friends.
You know much about him?
I never ask questions. What my gentleman acquaintances do is their business.
I see. This Marco, is he tall, thin?
Yes, with green eyes. Fascinating. Exciting.
Does he have a curious habit of twitching his mouth?
He does.
Well, he's our man, Holmes.
What do you want with him?
I thought you were more interested in details about your gentleman acquaintances.
Very well. Ça m'est égal. I do not care. Emile has an exquisite suite here. He has invited me to enjoy it until his return. Would you care to wait? Have a drink? Perhaps we may become friends, too.
Thank you, no. We've more urgent matters at hand. Come, Watson, to our room. Mademoiselle, we shall return at 9 sharp to meet Emile Marco.
Given us here at the hotel, eh, Holmes?
Yes, Watson. But obviously an intruder has chosen to upset the decor.
Yes, by Jove, someone has been here to our rooms. Made a ghastly mess of them. Look, they've opened every drawer and the chest. And our luggage.
Yes, forced open and the contents strewn on the floor. I should say the alluring demoiselle was also a member of this fantastic ring of spies that's closing in on us.
Mathilde? Do you really think so?
Quite. Clearly, the objective was to lure us to Marco's suite, occupy us temporarily, while others went through our luggage here in our room.
But the plans, Holmes, they were here in your valise. They may have stolen your half of the plan.
Precisely why I'm rummaging through the luggage.
Well, are they gone?
Yes, Watson. The plans are gone.
Well, then you bungled it, Holmes. For the first time in your entire career, Holmes, you bungled it. And for such high stakes.
Have I?
Did you hear a strange sound, huh?
Yes, I do. Coming from that closet to your left. Open it, Watson. Careful.
Yes, right there.
See anything in there?
Well, one of my traveling bags, that's all.
Are you sure?
Absolutely.
Bring the bag here to me quickly.
All right. There you are. Yes, the ticking's coming from inside the bag.
Open it, man, instantly. It may be a time bomb placed there by Marco's ring.
Time bomb?
Yes.
Just 1 second. I'll just open this catch.
Hurry, sir. Hurry. The clothing. Take it out, Watson. We must see.
Yes. See the shorts and shoes. Yes, I see it, Holmes. It's a small black object.
Quick, give it to me. Watson, open the window.
Go through it, man. Hurry. Go on, Holmes. We'll be killed. It went off in the yard. We were a split second away from being blown to bits.
Yes, quite. The stairway, Watson. Follow me.
Where to?
Downstairs. I shall speak to the clerk at the main desk. I don't believe a word that French girl said. I do not believe Marco's gone until 9. I do believe that if we challenge this spy ring that has us trapped here in the hotel, it'll be death immediately, either for them or for us. And that is just the way I want it.
Mr. Harris, tell me again about that handsome-looking man. He's for me.
The best-dressed man in any crowd is the man who wears Clippercraft clothes. For spring, new all-wool worsted Clippercraft suits, only $45. Clippercraft topcoats in all-wool gabardine or covert, only $40 to $47.50. Handsomely styled, tailored to the finest standards of traditional New England craftsmanship, Clippercraft clothes take their name from the famous New England Clipper ships and the speedy airliners of the same name. Sold by more than 1,200 independent local merchants from coast to coast, the leading hometown merchants everywhere. That's why the ladies say, when they see you in your new Clippercraft spring suit,
who's that handsome, successful-looking man? He's for me.
And that's why men who know, insist on Clippercraft clothes bearing the Clippercraft label. So be sure to visit the Clippercraft store in your city.
These leading stores in the metropolitan area are proud to add their names to Clippercraft in your suits and topcoats. In Manhattan, Saks 34th, Broadway at 34th, John Wanamaker's Men's Stores, Broadway at 8th and 67 Liberty Street. In Brooklyn, Abram and Strauss. In Newark, New Jersey, Boulevard Men's Shop, Kresge Newark. And in Jamaica, the B&B Clothes Shop, 16408 Jamaica Avenue.
Dr. Watson, I can't recall you and Mr. Holmes being in a more baffling and dangerous situation than at the Hotel Metropole in Paris, a few steps behind Emil Marco, the elusive enemy agent.
It was extremely dangerous, Mr. Harris. Marco's German spy ring, which seemed to be everywhere we turned, had found Holmes's half of the infinitely valuable British war plans and had vanished with it. Holmes and I hurried to the front desk of the hotel to question the clerk.
I understand, Clark, that Mr. Emil Marco will return here at 9 this evening.
Monsieur Marco?
Yes.
Did you go to his suite earlier this evening, Monsieur Holmes?
Yes, 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 I did. There was a young lady there.
I am sorry that you went directly to Monsieur Marco's suite. If you had stopped to inquire here, I might have saved time for you. You see, Monsieur Marco left this afternoon. Permanently.
Well,
and the young lady in his suite, Mathilde Piaget?
The mademoiselle left just a few moments ago.
Do you know where she's gone?
I believe she said something about the train to Berlin. She was in great hurry.
To meet Emil Marco, no doubt, eh, Holmes?
What time does the train depart for Berlin?
It departs in approximately 4 minutes.
Well, that is not enough time for us to reach the station.
Perhaps not, Watson, but there's nothing to prevent our boarding the train after it and rushing to Berlin.
The train after it departs in 2 hours, Monsieur Holmes.
We should be aboard that train, Watson. Thank you, Clark.
Berlin, Holmes, are you mad? The very center of the German government? Well, if we've almost been murdered outside of Germany, what on earth might happen to us were we found in Berlin?
Our personal safety does not matter in this case, Watson. We are on a counter-espionage assignment for the British governor. By all the rules of international intelligence, you and I are expendable. My brother Mycroft made it clear that possession of these plans may mean triumph or defeat in a war with Germany. So, you and I, my dear Watson, are petty marionettes. We'll fetch our luggage and ride to Berlin.
Oh, it's awfully crowded, this Berlin station, Holmes.
Yes, Watson, and I dare say this crowd is neatly spiced with Marco's men awaiting an opportunity to strike.
Very foolhardy, Holmes, to have entered the trap this way. How the dickens will you ever find that French girl? Or Marco?
Elementary, my dear Watson, elementary.
Yes, but in all of Berlin, with their secret agents at every turn, scheming about our death?
I insist. As always, I have a method.
Latest newspapers. Buy your newspapers
here. Our first problem, Watson, will be to leave this station alive.
Yes, quite. Anyone in this crowd may be an agent with a knife or a gun.
Quite. Keep your eyes open.
Newspaper, gentlemen.
No, thank you.
All the news, gentlemen. Just to finish, all the news.
We told you we don't want a newspaper. Now, I'll be off with you.
This way, Watson. There's the exit.
A crude news vendor. Practically shoved the newspaper down our throats. I say it's very dark outside the station here, Holmes. Is it advisable for us to step out this way?
We cannot remain here at the railway terminal. We must find our coquette and Marco. Right, there's the exit.
One moment, Holmes.
What is it?
That news vendor. He seems to be following us.
Just your imagination.
No, I don't think so. He was at the center of the station when we stepped off the train. He's been right behind us ever since.
All right. Walk through the exit. That's it. Watch him.
He's still behind us.
Duck into this doorway. It's as black as pitch. We lose him.
Yes, right.
Now, wait. If he comes through the exit.
We'll be helpless, Holmes. I'm sure he has a gun.
Shh. Wait.
There he is. He's looking about.
I see you two gentlemen in the doorway. You will remain there, please. Do not move. Do not speak. I have a gun. I am coming over to chat with you.
Good evening, Mr. Holmes, Dr. Watson.
If you intend to kill us, go on and shoot. Be over with it.
I should like to introduce myself. My name is Collins, British Intelligence.
British Intelligence? Uh-huh.
Then you received my wire.
We did.
Wire? What wire?
The moment I knew the French girl had left for Berlin, Watson, while you were packing our luggage, I sent a wire here to British Intelligence in code. Mycroft had given me the information as to the technique, if required. My wire described Mathilde in detail. I told British intelligence to pick her up here at the station and keep after her. Then to communicate with us at the moment we left the train.
We spotted her leaving the train. We followed her.
Excellent.
I'm sorry if I gave you a bit of a scare following you this way. I had no choice in the matter. I had to force you to stand here. Might have believed I was a German agent and fled.
Where is Mathilde?
She's gone to a building on the outskirts of Berlin. An old ramshackle building. Awful place. 27 Ludwigstrasse.
Thank you, Collins. You've done a superb job.
Are you going to 27 Ludwigstrasse now, Mr. Holmes?
This very minute.
Just you and Dr. Watson?
Just the two of us. A third party might alarm the Germans so much that they'd simply fire at us as we approach the building. It must be more beguiling. It must appear as though Watson and I are merely dupes falling into their hands.
Holmes, how can the two of us possibly hope to overcome whatever crew of blasted devils is at 27 Ludwigstrasse?
It does seem rash, Mr. Holmes.
Nevertheless, it must be done. Watson and I must enter that building if we're to find Marco and the plans. We must enter it alone, alive, and well. Although we may not leave that way.
There it is, Holmes. 27 Ludwigstrasse. It's an ugly building.
Mm. Front door, Watson. Shall we mount the stairs and ring?
Suicidal, I'd say. But if it's our only chance, I'll...
Come along, then.
Monsieur Holmes, Dr. Watson, I am so happy to see you again.
Mademoiselle, may we come in?
Certainly, I'm delighted. Won't you make yourselves comfortable?
Thank you. You've been expecting us, of course.
Of course. We were sorry that our time bomb did not kill you at the Hotel Metropole. We realized you would continue your efforts to find Emil Marco and the plans our men took from your luggage.
Where's Marco?
I am afraid you will not meet him, Dr. Watson.
And why won't we meet this Marco?
Oh, because we are going to kill you, Monsieur Holmes.
Oh?
Oh, I am being rude. I forgot. A cigarette? Drink?
If you think we're going to remain seated here, doing nothing, just accepting this,
I'm afraid there isn't anything you can do about it, Dr. Watson.
Ah, I recognize the voice. Our visitor in the train compartment.
Yes, Holmes. I may introduce myself now. My name is Gustav. Like Mathilde, I'm an employee of Emil Marco, his personal representative. And I still have that same gun, you see. You played a rather deplorable trick on us, Mr. Holmes.
Have I, Gustav?
We wanted your half of the plans. You left them in your luggage. We examined them carefully.
Yes.
They're false. They're not really your half of the plans at all, are they? An excellent counterfeit, but with its weakness.
That's wonderful, Holmes. Then they haven't the real half they wanted, eh?
I hardly been stupid enough to have gallivanted about the continent carrying the real half. I resent that, Gustav. You've underestimated me.
I beg your pardon. Now, as for the business at hand, I'd like you to meet a friend of ours. Peter.
Yeah, Gustav.
Peter, this is Mr. Holmes and Dr. Watson.
I see. I will take care of them for you.
Peter was a wrestler. Unfortunately, he was drugged. His tactics were illegal. Too cruel. You may leave, Matilda.
Yes, Gustav. Good night, Monsieur Holmes. Doctor?
Peter has made quite a study of the human body, Holmes. He's a specialist in various methods of creating unbearable pain.
Yeah, I have my own way.
Holmes, we want to know exactly where the real half of the plans is. Your half.
I haven't the slightest intention of revealing that, Gustav.
Dr. Watson, could Holmes have told you where he has hidden those papers?
He did not. If he did, I would defy you to learn their whereabouts.
I was afraid this would be your answer. You're a reckless gentleman, Holmes. You force me to take all sorts of steps that I am most reluctant to take. I'm a mild man at soul. I believe the problems of man versus man can be settled on a cordial level. I dislike animal tactics. But, since you insist... Peter?
Yeah, Gustav. Ready. I will make them talk very quickly by taking hold of the arms.
You may recall, Holmes, in the train compartment, I said we never kill our opponents in an ordinary manner. We torture them to death. I want to know where the papers are, Holmes. But perhaps it will require a bit of persuasion. Go on, Peter.
Yeah, Gustav, I will make Holmes answer.
That's it, Peter. Go on, persuade him.
Surely, Gustav, you must know I wouldn't be carrying our half of the genuine plans. They are, of course, somewhere in England, safely in the custody of the Admiralty, where you will never lay hands on them.
We thought of that, Holmes. It is possible you're telling the truth. But there is another possibility, too. Are you as patriotic as you seem, Mr. Holmes? You are not an official employee of the British government. I believe you may not be cooperating with England either, but playing this game alone, trying to collect both halves of the real plan yourself.
Fantastic nonsense.
It would be so profitable for you to have both halves and sell them to the highest bidder. Isn't that what you're attempting, Holmes?
I repeat, the idea is absurd.
Answer me. Help him to answer me, Peter.
Yeah.
If you have deceived the British, I will be glad to work with you, Holmes. But you must tell me the truth. Tell me exactly what you're doing.
I must say the weather here in Berlin is rather chilly for this time of year.
You won't keep this up for long, Holmes. Again, Peter.
Holmes. Good Lord, I...
Come, Watson, don't look so agitated. I have no doubt I shall survive the efforts of this butcher. One has only to make the brain the master of the body, to concentrate, to divorce it from its physical functions. A trick I learned in the East, Watson.
Speak, you swine, speak. Donna better, Gustav. This man Holmes is iron. He will not speak.
All right. Release him, Peter. So, you still won't disclose the truth, eh, Holmes?
I was remarking to Watson here that your climate in Berlin is usually much warmer at this time.
I've had enough of your stupid English humor, Mr. Holmes. I have a better idea.
Really?
Dr. Watson and I are going on a little trip together to my private retreat. You, Peter, will stay here and guard Mr. Holmes.
Well, sounds like some new deviltry, eh, Holmes?
Just what is this proposition, Gustav?
Very simple. Very simple indeed. I shall be in touch with Peter here by telephone. If, Mr. Holmes, you do not disclose the truth about the plans in 24 hours, my hostage and your friend, Dr. Watson, will die.
Newspaper, Fräulein? Afternoon newspaper?
No, go away. I do not want any newspaper.
But you will find it interesting to read for your lunch hour. The Kaiser has told the British...
Go away. Stop following me. And if you persist, I shall call the police.
Step into this alley here, quick.
What do you want?
Collins, R-52 British Intelligence. The fleet rides high at Scapa Flow. Quick, identify and give me the counterpass.
Greta Brunner, telephone employee, Berlin Central Exchange G19. Counterpass, the dahlias grow high in Devonshire.
Good. Move back further into the alley.
Yes.
Here, where you can't be seen.
Yes.
Now listen. A friend of ours has been spirited from a house at 27 Ludwigstrasse. Another friend is being held there also under custody. Telephone has been installed at the house.
Yes, go on.
It's possible that a call will come to the house from the German agent who has left it. Can you tap that call and find out where it came from?
Yes. Yes, I think so. Another girl works the switchboard on that line,
see
but
that she becomes ill and has to go home. You know how.
Yes.
If the call comes through, get in touch with me at once. I'll be waiting at this number.
Your number, please.
Lützow 8834.
Lützow 8834. Danke sehr.
Ja, who is this?
Peter, this is Gustav. Has Holmes weakened yet?
No, the Schwein will not talk.
I see. Tell him that I am cutting the time to 12 hours. I will continue to hold his friend here at the Schloss until then. After that, it will be all over.
Well, Mr. Holmes, before long, Gustav will kill Dr. Watson if you do not talk.
I'm quite aware of my dilemma. I'm also aware that if I gave your superior the information which I...
Open up! Open the door!
Who is that?
Who do you think, you fool? I couldn't wait. I've done away with Watson. Now we'll give the same treatment to Holmes. Open the door!
Yeah, Gustav. One moment. I was just trying again to get Holmes to talk and...
Thank you, Collins. I must compliment you on your faculty for appearing in the right place at the right moment.
Thank you, sir.
I think I've located Dr. Watson with the cooperation of one of our agents at the Berlin Telephone Exchange.
Capital, man, capital. Where is he?
He's being held in a deserted castle at Spandau, sir. It belongs to the man Gustav's ancestral family.
Excellent. Collins.
Yes, sir.
You're not above taking a dangerous risk.
Danger is my vocation, sir.
Good fellow. First, you'll dress in dead Peter's clothes here, his cap, overcoat, everything. They'll fit you a trifle loosely, perhaps, but well enough. In short, you will impersonate Gustav's dead henchman. Understand, Collins?
Yes, Mr. Holmes. But then I take it we're going to Spandau?
With all possible haste. Time is already running short, and the life of my good friend, Dr. Watson, hangs in the balance.
Before you buy that new spring suit, just remember this. When you get a new spring Clippercraft worsted suit for only $45, an all-wool covert cloth top coat for $40, or an all-wool Clippercraft gabardine top coat for $42.50, you're getting the most for your money. Clippercraft clothes take their name from the famous Clipper ships that established honest New England quality everywhere in the world. Yet they're as modern as the Clipper planes that fly around the world today. Yes, you can trust Clippercraft clothes and the men who sell them. That's why men who know insist on Clippercraft clothes bearing the Clippercraft label. So be sure to visit the Clippercraft store in your city.
These leading stores in the metropolitan area are proud to add their names to Clippercraft in your suits and topcoats. In Manhattan, John Wanamaker's Men's Stores, Broadway at 8th and 67 Liberty Street, Saks 34th, Broadway at 34th. In Brooklyn, Abram and Strauss. In Newark, New Jersey, Boulevard Men's Shop, Kresge, Newark. And in Jamaica, the B&B Clothes Shop, 16408 Jamaica Avenue.
Well, Dr. Watson, Mr. Holmes and Collins, the British agent, were off to rescue you at the castle in Spandau, where Gustav held you as his prisoner.
Yes, Mr. Harris, the castle in Spandau was a huge deserted spot. In the dead of night, Holmes stood with Collins before the entrance.
Look, Mr. Holmes, vultures flying over the castle.
Instinct, Collins. They expect a human death.
Could Gustav have killed Watson? Are we too late?
Perhaps. Now, you will walk to the main gate.
Yes.
In your disguise as Peter, you'll ring. You'll keep Gustav occupied at the front door.
I understand.
If Gustav becomes at all suspicious, shoot to kill.
I shall.
I will dash to the rear of the castle. I'll prowl about till I find the room where Watson's being held captive and free him. Then we shall attack Gustav while he's talking to you.
Excellent.
Good luck.
Will you come back, Gustav? Answer me.
Watson. It's Holmes.
Holmes, by Jove. How did you get in here?
There'll be time later to explain. Come along. Collins of Intelligence is downstairs in this castle chatting with Gustav.
Yes, I see.
All right, now take this revolver. We shall steal downstairs and surprise Gustav. This way. The stairs. As cautiously as you can.
Right.
What on earth has happened?
Something's gone wrong with Collins. Terribly wrong. Hurry, Watson, run down these stairs.
Wait, look. Staggering up these stairs toward us. It's Gustav. His face is covered with blood.
Yes, he discovered Collins was disguised. They exchanged shots.
Well, Gustav's been hit two or three times, you see. He's holding his side there. Blood from his chest, too. He's grasped the railing.
Holmes! Dr. Watson! Where one German falls, many more will rise. We will yet have the plans. You seem successful now, but any victory over us... it's an illusion.
Well, he's falling down the stairs.
Just let him fall to the death he so eminently deserves, Watson. But where is our own agent? Where's Collins? This way, toward the front of the building, where he and Gustav shut it out.
There he is, lying on the floor there. Is he dead?
Yes, Watson.
Poor devil.
Shot through the head. Thank heaven the first bullet from Gustav's revolver ended it for him. He didn't suffer. I shall inform my brother Mycroft at Whitehall that Agent Collins died valiantly in the performance of his assigned duty.
Where to now, Holmes? We've still not found Germany's half of the plans for the new tank. We've still not found the master spy, Emil Markov.
The answer to those crucial questions, Watson, lies in London.
Yes, but we left London days and days ago. We fought our way here to Berlin to find Marco and retrieve the papers.
Nevertheless, the answer is in London. We must get out of Germany.
How? We're surrounded.
We shall board the very next train from Berlin to the French border and meet whatever awaits us.
Well, so far we're doing well, Holmes. We've caught the train. We're on our way to the French border.
If we can remain alive to reach it, Watson.
Dash it, why are we returning to London, Holmes? The conductor.
Tickets, please.
Well, here you are, sir.
Thank you, Mynheer.
I presume they're in order?
So they are, Mynheer. Just one more item have I to tend to, and...
I don't think you will, sir. Use the button for your revolver, Watson. Strike him down.
Yes.
Good work.
Why did you seize him, Holmes? He's hardly reached for his ticket punch when you pounced upon him.
The bulge in his coat pocket, I realized it might be a revolver, as indeed it is. No, he's another of Marco's endless supply of killers. He was assigned to murder us here.
Well, we can't leave him here. There'll be an inquiry.
Oh, yes, we can leave him. You see, we're leaving this train.
At the first stop?
No, immediately. There may be other German agents aboard. There are just two of us. We can't take the risk. My intention, you see, Watson, was to do just this, even before the conductor arrived. We boarded the train ostentatiously, so they'd make plans for us all along the route. Now, we shall spring the trap. Come, the corridor. Open that door, Watson.
Holmes, we can't leave off the train at this speed.
Our only chance. We shall wait for a run of what is apparently soft earth. Now relax as you go, Watson. Arms and legs loose. Try to roll over easily as you strike the earth. You ready?
Yes, ready.
After me, Watson! Jump!
It's wonderful to be back on the streets of London, eh, Holmes?
Yes, quite.
But why have we run here to Soho? We haven't even reported to Whitehall.
Because, Watson, we must visit the shop where this gigantic and gruesome trip began. The shop of Grimsby, the tobacconist.
Grimsby shop? But why?
Because we've journeyed to foreign cities, eluded death, and fought the greatest spying of our day, all because of a few sentences spoken by the shy, friendly tobacconist here in this shop. Shall we speak to him just once more?
Back in London, Mr. Holmes and Dr. Watson?
Yes, Grimsby.
Wasn't Mr. Emil Marco at his hotel here in London? I described him to you. Tall, thin, and a nervous habit of twitching his mouth.
Yes, you did describe him, Grimsby. But he was not at the hotel in London, nor was he in Paris, nor was he in any of the dark and bloody corners of the continent where we sought him. Do you know why, sir?
I can't imagine.
Because there isn't an Emil Marco. There never was an Emil Marco. This master of the German spy net that Watson and I and all of British intelligence have been pursuing is an illusion created by you, Grimsby.
Holmes, I can't believe it.
When Watson and I first visited your shop, Grimsby, I asked about your client because I detected the odor of a rare tobacco in the room where we found a dead agent. I wanted the man who smoked that tobacco. He was the chief. He had the missing half of Britain's plans. You are that man, Grimsby. You didn't expect us, did you? You're smoking that brand of tobacco at this very moment.
So I am. Yes, I'd hoped in creating Marco to attract you to Germany. I could learn the truth from you there. Then I could dispense with you.
Very advisable. You could operate with ease in Germany rather than here in Britain.
I simply informed my associate to pass the lie along, drawing you to Berlin with the phantom Marco as a magnet. I cannot wait to bargain with you for your half of the plan. I shall just destroy my half, reducing both my opponents to an equal status again. Your half being worthless without mine. I shall burn my half. It's here, in my pocket. Britain will never have the weapon it seeks. Here, set a match to these papers I hold in my hand. Go on, Dr. Watson, or I shall blow your head off with this revolver.
I can't do it, Holmes.
Do as he says, Watson. He'll kill you.
Very well.
Thank you. Now I must leave. Lock this door from the outside. Do not attempt to shout or leave until I've disappeared down the street, or I will shoot.
Auf Wiedersehen, gentlemen.
He's gone, Holmes. Vanished into the crowd. The plans, they're burned to a crisp.
Quickly, Watson, pick up that chair. Don't lose time trying to force the lock on that door. Smash the glass with that chair. Yes,
right you are.
And now a cab, Watson. Grimsby will try to leave London instantly. A cab to Waterloo Station.
Why should Grimsby be here at Waterloo Station, Holmes?
Because he realizes Whitehall would turn London topsy-turvy to find him. He must return to Germany. All aeroplanes in this area are in British hands. He must travel by boat train to the Channel. And this is where he'd board the next train. The revolver handy?
Yes.
There he is, by that gate.
All right, I'll stop. Stand where you are, Grimsby.
Holmes. Dr. Watson.
I'm afraid we have the upper hand now, sir. Now, before we turn you over to the authorities, where are your half of the plans?
You saw me destroyed. I burnt them before your own eyes at the shop.
Oh, no, Grimsby. You played card after card by which we have been deluded. But I say you still have the missing half of the plans of Britain's new weapon on your person. This last ruse of yours is quite transparent. And you burnt an ordinary piece of paper.
Did I?
I'll search him, Holmes. All right, put up your hands, Grimsby.
Oh, he wouldn't carry the papers openly in his pockets, Watson. Nor in his wallet. He would conceal them in a spot where no one might think to look. Except, of course, your humble servant.
I'll find him.
The search isn't necessary, Watson. One must always analyze a personality in its own milieu. Within itself, it contains the answer to its mysteries. Now, where would a tobacconist be likely to conceal a few small papers? Why, beneath the tobacco in his tin.
Let's have a look at that tin. I'll open it. Filled with tobacco.
And beneath the very same rare tobacco which first launched us on this great adventure, Watson?
The plans, Holmes. The plans!
Well, Dr. Watson, the adventure of the elusive agent was really one of the most exciting adventures you and Mr. Holmes have ever had, and a crucial point in the history of World War I, may I add.
Yes, indeed, Mr. Harris. As you know, the British did succeed in keeping their plans for the tank a secret. It proved to be a very decisive weapon.
Well, where was Mr. Holmes' half of the plans, Doctor?
In a vault at Whitehall, Mr. Harris, under special guard of the Royal Navy.
Well, Dr. Watson, these past 3 weeks have been very exciting and memorable ones.
Yes, but do you think, Mr. Harris, our audience is in favor of these longer stories? You see, some of our more colorful stories are too long to compress into one short program.
Well, then, Dr. Watson, a letter or a postcard from our listeners will give us the answer. Just address Clippercraft in care of the station to which they are listening and tell us what they think. I presume, Dr. Watson, that your next memoir is just as gripping as this one.
Well, next week, Mr. Harris, I shall relate a story about Holmes and myself that I've called The Mad Miners of Cardiff. It occurred in Wales at an abandoned coal mine. It concerned a miner's jacket, a murder committed in the darkest depths of the earth, and a spectacle so awful it drove human beings out of their minds.
The makers of Clippercraft clothes and more than 1,200 stores from coast to coast have brought you another in the new series of broadcasts featuring the world's most famous detective, Sherlock Holmes. Our stories are based upon the character Sherlock Holmes created by Sir Arthur Conan Doyle, and the program is produced and directed by Basil Lochran. Sherlock Holmes is played by John Stanley, Dr. Watson by George Spelvin. This week's story was written by Max Ehrlich and Howard Merrill, with special music by Albert Berman. If you don't know your Clippercraft dealer, write Clippercraft, 200 Fifth Avenue, New York City. Be a friendly neighbor and buy your Easter seals to provide proper medical care, healthful recreation, and special vocational training for crippled children. Every Easter seal you buy helps a crippled child to meet the challenge of a handicap. Be sure to listen next week to Sherlock Holmes in The Mad Miners of Cardiff. Cy Harris speaking for Clipper Craft Clothes. This is the Mutual Broadcasting System.
Welcome back. Well, this comes pretty late in the career of Sherlock Holmes. This would be after the retirement to beekeeping. And it took place sometime before his last bow. Tom, this is a good old Edwardian melodrama with bombs and mustache twirling villains and mixing in a bit of selling Clippercraft clothes in.
That it was. And pre-World War I. So we know a war's on the horizon. And this, of course, involves an important state secret for Britain.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's good high-stakes stuff. It was interesting because, like, if you listen to a modern story that's set then, they'll always be sure to bring up the beekeeping, but here they didn't seem to care. They're just like, okay, it's 1913. He's alive and available. Let's just go ahead and get him into the story.
Well, and I like the Mycroft Holmes, who had been elevated to the peerage and was had an important ministry, and it was ended up being Mycroft who brought him in, and I don't think Sherlock ever said no to Mycroft.
Yeah, that does seem to be something that they avoided in the canon. I did find out the writer on this was Max Ehrlich, which I hadn't noticed when I first played this, but he wrote for a lot of radio programs, The Shadow, Mr. and Mrs. North, and episodes of Star Trek and The Defenders. And he was also known for the novel and later the film, which is like a horror mystery, The Reincarnation of Peter Prout. Nothing I've ever seen, but that is where his career would go.
It was a movie that came out in the 70s, and I vaguely recall that. So, yep. But if you can write for Sherlock Holmes and you can write for Star Trek, you're okay in my book.
Yeah, definitely. Put some skills into this. Now, I wanted to talk a little bit about your podcast, and I think we started both like in the Stone Age of podcasting, you know, where, you know, like the Fred Flintstone school of podcasting. When did you get started in podcasting and with the Compliance Podcast Network?
So I started podcasting in 2012. I started for two reasons. One, it was an outgrowth of marketing for my consultancy. But the other reason was the following. My daughter was, I think, 15 at the time, and Dad was decidedly uncool. So one day I went to her and I said, honey, if I had a podcast on iTunes and you could tell your friends about it, would that be cool? And she goes, yeah, that'd be cool, Dad. So I started a podcast, and for about 30 days, I was cool in my daughter's eyes. And that, of course, ended. But it has a lot of uses and a lot of varieties. I founded the Compliance Podcast Network in 2017, and now it's pretty much my full-time job.
Wow. And, you know, I think the 30 days of being cool is got to be the big benefit. I know of dads who went body surfing in a mosh pit and didn't get that much cool. So that's an achievement. So let's talk about adventures in compliance. The mix of Sherlock Holmes and compliance. What inspired that?
So I have my network is in legal and regulatory compliance. I'm a lawyer by professional training. And that was the area of my specialty. So that's the genesis of the Compliance Podcast Network. Adventures in Compliance serves two functions. One, I get to reread all of the Sherlock Holmes stories in order. Two, I get to talk about them. And that's sort of how I think of or how I create podcasts. You mentioned Star Trek. I've done the full, the original series, 79 episodes, trekking through compliance lessons from Star Trek. But Sherlock Holmes, for me, it's a never-ending fascination. I reread the stories. I read commentary more. I go down different rabbit trails just because I absolutely love Conan Doyle and Sherlock Holmes. And it was really just another excuse to sit down and reread the stories and look at them from the ethics and compliance perspective, but then I decided it. There were so many other lessons that my audience needs and wants to hear, like leadership lessons from Sherlock Holmes, investigative lessons, pattern recognition of all things I found in Sherlock Holmes stories. So I'm really using it to help compliance professionals trying to tell stories so that compliance professionals can use the strategies that Conan Doyle wrote into the Sherlock Holmes stories in their modern day compliance programs.
Okay. And sorry if you're hearing any construction going on. Just had a little background noise here. The podcaster's nemesis. Now, obviously, you don't have as much of experience with this particular story, The Elusive Agent, as you do the entire canon of original stories. But could you talk about what are the compliance lessons that you could draw from The Elusive Agent?
Sure. So The Elusive Agent, I found it was just a fascinating story. It had a lot more violence, I would say, than if typically found in a Conan Doyle story. We had one murder very quickly. We had two murders very, very quickly of a young, not spouse, but fiance and two people engaged who turned out to be on opposite sides of the spy fence. And we had several other shootings throughout the stories. I have to say the tobacco-ist was probably my favorite part, because Holmes is a purveyor and expert in tobacco ashes. In the Conan Doyle stories, it's cigars. Here it was cigarettes. And he could identify a cigarette from the odor, and then he could identify the tobaccoist who put it together because of his knowledge of tobaccoists in this, in the city of London. And I really love that part. We got to do a little travelogue. We went from England to Paris to Germany and back to England. So we had travel. That's always fun. But in terms of the compliance lessons, number one, a thorough investigation. I mentioned the tobaccoist, and that was, for me, the primary investigation as Holmes worked through that. And that, of course, led to the final ending of the story. But as a compliance professional, you have to have a thorough investigation of any issue if an issue arises. Number two, attention to detail. Every compliance professional must be attentive to detail, whether it's a number in a spreadsheet or whether it's an interview with a witness. And I can think of no better character in fiction who has more attention to detail than Sherlock Holmes. Here it was cigarette smoke and then the ingredients of tobacco. It was hiding plans, figuring out where they were hidden. It was bringing false plans to throw the enemy off. It was just an incredible amount of attention to detail. Ethical conduct is a part of every compliance program. It's a part of hopefully every corporation. But here I'd like to focus on compliance officers. And it's not that you have to be above and beyond reproach, much like Caesar's wife, but you do. You have to engage in ethical conduct. You cannot be seen doing unethical conduct. And I thought Holmes in this story very much engaged in ethical conduct, even when he was not threatened with torture, but under torture, and was threatened with the death or murder of his partner, John Watson, Dr. Watson. So ethical conduct is incredibly important. Critical thinking. As a lawyer by training, sometimes you get kind of stuck in the law and you don't really use the critical thinking that you need to as a compliance officer. I say in compliance, you're only limited by your imagination. So critical thinking is a key component. Collaboration and communication. There is no greater example of collaboration and communication than the Sherlock Holmes stories. Holmes and Watson, Holmes and Watson, Holmes and Watson. Basil Rathbone and Nigel Bruce. It's always a collaboration. Sometimes it's Inspector Lestrade, sometimes not. But there's collaboration and communication. And then probably the lesson I enjoy talking the most about, and frankly, it applies to you as well as anyone I've ever met, Adam, and that's continuous learning. Just in the times I've visited with you, you're infinitely curious, and you're always studying. And that's what I love about compliance. It's what I love about Sherlock Holmes is if he doesn't know it, he's going to learn it. He'll go off and study it. It may be a rabbit trail. He may be on cocaine. It doesn't matter. He is a continuous learner. And I tell people that's probably the single biggest or most important skill in compliance is you have to be open to new ideas and new things and always learning. So those are just some of the lessons I saw from The Elusive Agent. It was a great story.
Yeah, it really was. And I appreciate the way you brought out those lessons and points. Now, if listeners want to find Adventures in Compliance, or they want to find any of your other podcasts, you've got so many different websites when you look online. Could you tell us where the best places are to find you?
Sure. The Compliance Podcast Network is found at compliancepodcastnetwork.net. All the shows are listed there. There's a catalog of all of my shows at the top of the website. I have featured podcasts. I have, as you said, a ton of podcasts, but they're all there in one place. So you can go there and link out to any of the shows, specifically Adventures in Compliance.
Well, thank you so much. I appreciate you joining us today, Tom, for this really, really different Sherlock Holmes story. And I hope people check you out. You're currently on The Return of Sherlock Holmes, the third Sherlock Holmes short story collection. And you've got all of the stories from the first two books that people can listen to as well. Now, we'll go ahead and wrap up here. Before we do, I want to thank our Patreon supporter of the day. Thank you to Jonathan, Patreon supporter since September of 2022, currently supporting the podcast at the Master Detective level of $15 or more per month. Thank you so much for your support. If you're enjoying the podcast, please follow us using your favorite podcast software. We'll be back tomorrow with an episode of The Falcon where...
Cuff, don't tell me it's lipstick. Come on, get wise to yourself, Ford. You're through. Your only chance is to play ball with us.
No.
I'm telling you, yes. Did Marv Draper put you up to this? Come on, Ford. Don't be a patsy. Why should Draper get away while you burn?
Draper had nothing to do with it.
Then who hired you?
I don't know.
You don't know?
Now help me, Sergeant. It's the truth. When I got home last night, there was an envelope under my door with five bills in it and a note.
What kind of a note?
Said if I knocked off her care, it'll be another $500 tonight.
Was there?
No.
Where's the original note?
I tore it up.
You're lying.
Why should I?
Listen, you punk, I want the truth. Who hired you to kill Jimmy Arcaro?
I tell you, I don't know.
Well, until I find out, I'm going to make it so hot for you that when you sit in that seat at Sing Sing, you'll think you're squatting on an icebox. Now, let's go.
I hope you'll be with us then. In the meantime, do send your comments to box13@greatdetectives.net. Follow us on Twitter at Radio Detectives and check us out on Instagram, instagram.com/greatdetectives. From Boise, Idaho, this is your host, Adam Graham, signing off.